Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, Kevin Williamson of National Review in for Jim today. And, Kevin, it's always good to have you with us. Let's start with the good martini, and that is the situation that has unfolded in the House Oversight Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee in the past couple of weeks as it relates to the testimony of Eric Holder, the Attorney General. A lot of people, all on the Republican side at this point, encouraging him to resign because he's clearly been covering his own tail as well as that of his subordinates and perhaps even those above him in this administration as it comes to Fast and Furious. We're about to see the Oversight Committee come forward with a contempt of Congress resolution that Darrell Issa and some others think at least 30 Democrats might sign on to as well. So it might not just be one party against the other here. There could be a little bit of momentum that finally puts a real spotlight on Holder's partisan tenure at the Justice Department.
I'm not like the hardcore crazy winger when it comes to the Obama administration. A lot of people think I'm too soft on the Obama administration. But in this particular case, you know, I think Eric Holder being held in contempt of Congress or losing his job ought to be the least of his concerns right now. He ought to be worried about the fact that he may go to jail and probably should over this. I mean, we put arms into the hands of some of the most dangerous people in the world for no apparent reason, unless there's some narrow political reason behind this, and then attempted to cover it up and all the rest of it. You know, I think about Iran-Contra, you know, the last big arms scandal. At least in Iran-Contra, we were arming the right side for a good reason. You know, we were arming the good guys back then, and now we're arming the bad guys, and I just can't figure out why that is. I think that at the end of this investigation, once things get sorted out, this is going to be a criminal case. This isn't just going to be a political scandal. Somebody should go to prison for this.
The more this comes to light, though, and people besides us on the right start talking about it, the more oxygen this story is going to get. It got a little bit when it first broke, but mainstream media, other than CBS, has been pretty careful not to let this one get too big for the president. So,
you know, if you were a private party who illegally provided arms to a criminal organization that was later used to murder an American law enforcement agent, you know, in Texas, they'll hang you for that. I mean, it's hard to be disappointed in the media just because you expect it, but you would think that they would get on top of this.
Yeah. As many people have said in the past, if this had happened under the Bush administration watch, you can bet that this would be front page fodder and leading most newscasts whenever these hearings were happening. But not the case.
Alberto Gonzalez would have been publicly crucified.
Absolutely. He was for, what, firing a few U.S. attorneys? I think this is probably a little bit bigger than that since a lot of people have been killed as a result of this policy.
Yeah.
So on to martini number two now. In the last couple of martinis, we're going to draw on Kevin's economic expertise to respond to some of the contentions the president's been making in the last 24 hours or so. Yesterday, the president had a very busy schedule, Kevin. He had six different fundraisers he went to, three in Pennsylvania, three in Maryland. This one, I guess, was in Maryland. And here he is defending himself as the guardian of the taxpayer dollars. Here we go.
So we inherited a $1 trillion deficit. We signed $2 trillion of spending cuts into law. I laid out a detailed plan for a total of $4 trillion in deficit reduction. My opponent won't admit it, but even when you account for the steps we took to prevent a depression and jumpstart the economy, right? So you include the Recovery Act, all the stuff we did to help states like Maryland make sure that they didn't have to lay folks off and put people back to work. Even if you take that into account, spending under my administration has grown more slowly than under any president in 60 years.
Kevin, clearly he's including TARP on top of the Bush deficit, so the numbers get fuzzy real quick here. Two issues here. How do you break this down if you're Mitt Romney, and do you think the general public's buying his explanation?
Oh, well, gosh, the general public, who knows what they're thinking. They're dumb. So, you know, you see, it's been a big liberal talking point the last couple of weeks of how much of the deficit is a result of Bush policy versus how much is a result of Obama policy. But these arguments are mixed up for a couple of reasons. You know, Bruce Bartlett had a piece, I guess, yesterday about this. And one thing they do wrong, of course, is that they take all of the cumulative policies over the Bush years and compare them with Obama. But Bush was in office for 8 years. Obama's only been in a little over three. So it's an apple and oranges sort of thing. But also, there are a lot of policies that Obama supports and has supported that get attributed to Bush. So, for instance, okay, let me break a little orthodoxy here. Yes, the Bush tax cuts cost the Treasury money. That's what tax cuts are designed to do. But Obama supports and has supported the majority of the Bush tax cuts, because the tax cuts that are the most expensive are the ones going to the people making $250,000 a year and less, you know, these so-called middle-class tax cuts. Everyone says they support those, and Obama does support them, and he's, you know, proposed keeping them in. He wants to keep them there. Well, that's a huge part of the revenue loss side of the growth in the deficit. People blame spending on the wars, although, you know, that hasn't been the major driver of spending. It's certainly not inconsiderable. But last time I checked, Obama didn't seriously propose to stop spending money in Iraq and Afghanistan and Yemen and Libya and Congo and all the other places we are. I can't believe we're in Congo. Every time I talk about this, I just shake my head. Obama has not come out with a serious proposal to reduce military spending. So all the stuff that he, you know, blames on Bush, I mean, at this point, we should be calling them the Obama tax cuts, right? I mean, he signed them into law. There's a lot of irresponsible fiscal policy, obviously. And the other thing that people dodge in this is that, yeah, spending got a lot worse toward the tail end of the Bush administration. What was different during those years?
A Democratic Congress, perhaps?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing about, you know, deficits and presidents, we have, you know, the Reagan deficits and the Clinton surplus and all the rest of it. It's stupid because presidents don't spend money. Congress does. You know, we had Tip O'Neill deficits in the 80s. We had a Gingrich surplus in the late 90s. Congress is really in charge, which is why I care a lot more about what happens in the Senate and the House this year than I care about who wins the White House, although I'd like to see Obama out just because, you know, I don't like looking at him.
That's a good enough reason. People have based their votes on far less substantial criteria than that. So
I just can't take that sort of smug chin tilt thing he does, you know.
Yeah, it's very interesting how he goes from supposedly praising George W. Bush at the portrait unveiling, and now he is once again the demon that led to our financial crisis. But
you know, I think this is bad politics on his part, too, because, you know, he was elected as the repudiation of Bush, right? I mean, that's what drove a lot of people over there. I mean, there was the financial crisis. People were tired of the war. They're tired of other things about Bush, tired of his gaffes and his kind of, you know, embarrassing way of talking. And so Obama was supposed to, you know, in the political imagination, come in and cleanse the country of everything we didn't like about the Bush administration. But he's failed to do that. And in fact, he's made a lot of things worse. And particularly from the view of the left, I would think, you know, his hardcore crazy supporters, they've got to be noticing that we've still got Guantanamo Bay open. They've got to be noticing we're doing, you know, drone assassinations of American citizens now, something Dick Cheney never even thought about. He's got to talk about something else, because he's just reminding people, I think, how much he's failed to do the thing he was elected to do.
Well, on to the crazy martini now. And one other thing he was asked to talk about was his health care plan, which shockingly has gotten very little attention from him lately, probably because he's, A, waiting to see what the Supreme Court does and whether he needs to vilify the nine justices, or more likely five justices, coming out of that decision in the next few days. But at the same time, he knows it's extremely unpopular, and so he wants people to forget about it when he's trying to run for re-election. But he was asked about it from a local reporter from Sioux City, Iowa, at the White House. And the question was, we have a business that says it's moving to Wisconsin from Iowa directly as a result of your health care policies. And here's the president's response.
Yeah, that'd be kind of hard to explain,
right?
Because the only folks that have been impacted in terms of the health care bill, mm-hmm, are insurance companies who are required to make sure that they're providing preventive care,
right,
or they're not dropping your coverage when you get sick. And so this particular company probably wouldn't have been impacted by that. I know that there's a perception sometimes that there's all kinds of regulations coming out of Washington. The truth is, actually, we've seen fewer regulations coming out of my administration than the previous administration.
All right, a couple quick points here, Kevin. Number one, I don't remember the Supreme Court spending almost three full days on the impact on the insurance company, so I'm pretty sure somebody else is potentially affected by this. Secondly, when it came to the financial crisis, wasn't the huge blow supposedly against the Bush administration that they were deregulating everything? And now all of a sudden, Obama's the one who's low on the regulations. Something's not adding up here.
Yeah. I mean, also, he's apparently shocked that even if it were just the insurance companies, that they might do this crazy thing called passing on cost to their customers. Imagine that. These things happen out there in the marketplace. You raise the cost of doing business and the cost of doing business goes up. Wow. Yeah, this is silly, of course, but it's an illustration, I think, of a deeper, you know, kind of hubris that affects people in politics, which is I think you can legislate away reality. I mean, the problem with healthcare isn't regulation of the market. It's not the insurance companies. It's not the drug companies. I mean, there are lots of things that could and should be done. It's not the tax code. The fundamental problem is scarcity. There's not enough stuff to go around for all the stuff that people want. That's the fundamental economic problem of all human life, right? Wheelchairs, pharmaceutical drugs, heart surgeons, you know, home care nurses. There's a limited number of this stuff. Nobody can have everything they want at a cost they're willing to pay. You cannot legislate away scarcity. And Obamacare is an attempt to do that. It's an attempt to, you know, move things around from here to there, subsidize this, put cost controls on that. But it doesn't change the underlying fact that what you have is a supply-side problem in healthcare, that there simply isn't enough stuff to go around, and that productivity in healthcare hasn't grown as fast as it has in a lot of other industries. And there's where you really have the political problem, because you do have regulatory and financial, tax, legal issues there that have kept that from happening. Yeah, markets respond to conditions in the marketplace. People are going to move. And what's going to be really interesting is when you have companies leaving not Iowa and not Wisconsin or wherever they're leaving, but leaving the country, when you've made the business environment here too hostile for them to operate. You know, Switzerland's starting to look pretty good to a lot of businesses right now. Singapore, energy companies setting up shop in Dubai and other places. If you make things hostile enough, capital's fungible. It just wants to be loved, and it'll go where it's loved.
That's a good lesson, and I think Mitt Romney could be a guy who can make that argument. We'll see if he does, because we're seeing some pretty flimsy defenses of perhaps what are the weakest points for President Obama, which means he probably is kind of flailing in desperation. But if this is the best he can do, things are looking up for this being a one-term presidency, I got to think.
You know, he can hold 6 fundraisers a day, but Mitt Romney can come out there and say, hey, you know what I did when I needed a fundraiser? I went and made some money for myself. You know, I went and fixed some businesses, manufactured goods and services, provided things people want and need in the marketplace. I think that Obama's running against Romney as a rich guy thing is really a bad idea in the long term, because I think Americans like a winner, you know, and Romney is certainly a guy who in a lot of ways looks like he's been a winner in life. And Obama, you know, not everyone wants to grow up to be a law professor.
Historically speaking, people who have appealed to optimism, whether it's Reagan, Clinton in 92, even Obama in 2008, have done very, very well. And the people who try to point the finger somewhere else for the blame usually get sent packing. So let's hope the trend continues. Kevin, have a great day. Thanks for filling in for Jim. We'll talk to you later.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Kevin Williamson of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim will be back tomorrow. Please join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.